The Xerxes Society for Invertebrate Conservation recently received a $300,000 federal grant to sustain their Monarch and Pollinator Habitat Kit program in Oregon's Willamette Valley, the Klamath-Siskiyou ecoregions in eastern Washington and California. The Xerxes grant is part of $5.2 million in grants recently awarded by the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation's Pollinator Fund for projects to conserve monarch butterflies and other insect pollinators across 24 states. In Oregon, there are two projects receiving grant monies from the fund. The Pollinator Partnership, they received a little more than $450,000. Joining the exchange to discuss the Xerxes $300,000 grant is Serena Jepson, Director of the Endangered Species Program at the Xerxes Society. Welcome.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Well, Serena, we'll get to the grant in a moment, but let's start with a bit of background on the Xerxes Society and the Endangered Species Program that you actually lead.
Sure, yes. We are a nonprofit organization dedicated to the conservation of invertebrates and their habitats, and we've been around for more than 50 years and have been working on monarch conservation since the 1980s.
So why was Xerxes chosen for this grant?
Oh, that's a great question. Our grant is to support habitat restoration and specifically providing native, pollinator-attractive, and monarch-attractive plants, such as milkweed, their host plant, to a wide variety of people who commit to planting those plants and taking care of them to provide the resources that monarch butterflies and many other pollinators need to complete their life cycles.
So I heard about a kit. Now, how will this money be used? What are these kits that we're talking about?
Sure, yes. So within these kits, we put together dozens of native plants, and we have a variety of kits depending on whether we're talking about our California program, our Oregon program, or our Washington program. But they include native wildflowers and some native shrubs. Some are for hedgerows. Some are for more like meadow landscape areas. And these kits go to working lands, public lands, tribal lands. Some examples are vineyards, schools, public parks, nature preserves. These are all the types of places that have received these kits. And today is a really important day because today the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service proposed to list monarchs as a threatened species under the Endangered Species Act. So it's really great that you've invited me onto your show today. It's a historic day in monarch conservation, and I'm so happy to be talking about one of the many solutions needed to recover this animal.
Well, that's interesting because once the monarch butterfly is listed on the Endangered Species List, I'm assuming that a world of other types of resources open up. Talk about that.
That is certainly the hope, and that's something that we have seen with other species. For example, the rusty-patched bumblebee that was listed as an endangered species from the upper Midwest and eastern U.S. We do see an increase in resources for habitat conservation and also research to better understand the animal and what it needs. So, yes, I think there already are quite a few resources going to conserve monarch butterflies, as indicated by this grant program that we're talking about. But hopefully that will continue and more resources will become available to meet this challenge.
Do you expect that will happen now that the monarch butterfly has been officially listed as an endangered species?
Yes. Yeah, so the proposal today by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is to list monarch butterflies as a threatened species under the Endangered Species Act. And it's a proposed rule. And so they're now seeking public comment and I believe intend to finalize the rule in about a year. So it's listing as a threatened species as opposed to an endangered species under the Endangered Species Act, allows more flexibility with habitat management, restoration, research, things like that. And yes, hopefully more resources will become available.
Okay, so you're introducing some nuances that I don't quite understand. So talk to me about the proposed listing as a threatened species versus an endangered species, and what do you mean by proposed? Is there a potential that this will not be accepted?
a decision, and this is just part of the Endangered Species Act listing process, that the regulatory agency, the Fish and Wildlife Service, proposes a species to be listed and then accepts public comment and later finalizes the rule. So I anticipate that this rule will be finalized, but this is just part of their process, and they've just, starting today, initiated a 90-day public comment period on this listing and some of the specifics of the rule within the listing. There's a what they call a 4D rule with a threatened listing that allows for certain types of habitat management, for example, that wouldn't necessarily be possible with an endangered listing.
And how can people comment? I mean, how do people even know about this?
Certainly, this was published in today's Federal Register, and there's information in the listing document itself in terms of where someone should submit public comments.
Okay, and what's the core problem that you're addressing?
That Xerces Society is addressing with our monarch butterfly conservation efforts?
Yes.
Yeah, so monarch butterflies are distributed all across the United States. They overwinter both in California and Mexico, and they also occur in parts of southern Canada. And we've seen the entire population decline very extensively. Monarch butterflies in the West have declined by more than 95%, and in the eastern U.S., they've declined by about 80% over just the last few decades. And they're threatened by a variety of things: habitat loss, pesticides, climate change. The main food source for monarch caterpillars is milkweed, and those have largely disappeared. Milkweeds have largely disappeared from croplands in the Midwest and elsewhere since the mid-90s. Also, insecticides like neonicotinoids, which are often used on seed coatings prophylactically in crops, have been linked to monarch decline. And in California, coastal development and pesticide uses have been most strongly linked to the decline of the Western population. And so there's really a need to take many actions. And one of those important actions is restoring habitat for monarchs to breed and nectar upon, so milkweed plants and native nectar plants, into the landscape, as well as protecting their really important overwintering sites. And for the Western population, those are, for the most part, all in California.
My guest is Serena Jepson, director of the Endangered Species Program at the Xerces Society. The organization recently received a $300,000 federal grant to support its efforts to save the monarch butterfly and other pollinators in Oregon, California, and Washington. Serena, help me understand the critical importance of a keystone species like the monarch.
Sure. I think monarchs are, if anything, sort of a poster child for the biodiversity crisis that we're facing. And efforts to conserve monarchs and their habitat extend far beyond protecting just monarchs. We are seeing widespread declines in so many different butterflies, and including butterflies that occur across many states. This is not... monarchs as a threatened species, that occurs all across the country, is really different than a lot of species that were considered threatened or endangered historically that may occur just in one meadow or a few locations. And I think monarchs are beloved by many and are really can serve as a poster child for the biodiversity crisis and can help a lot of other species along the way. They're also important in ecosystems, for sure. They likely play a role in milkweed pollination with their long-distance migration. Even though they are brightly colored and poisonous, many, many different animals have do consume them, and so they're also important as a food source.
Did you just say that these butterflies, these monarch butterflies, are poisonous?
Yes, yeah. Their bright coloration warns predators of their toxicity, and yet there are many animals that have evolved to still be able to feed upon them.
So how do they reproduce? I mean, if you're telling me that the population has declined 95%, mm-hmm. how do they reproduce, and what is a healthy level of population?
Yeah, that's really, these are great questions. So monarchs tend to mate shortly after the overwintering season, usually, or sort of towards the end of the overwintering season. And I'll talk about the Western population because this is Jefferson Public Radio, and because the Xerces Society monitors and runs a monitoring program to track the status of the Western population. And so that is certainly a concern, that monarchs will have a hard time reproducing if the population gets too small. But they tend to mate in February as the overwintering sites are breaking up and as monarchs are dispersing out onto the landscape across the western U.S.
Okay, so what's a healthy level of population that would give you an indicator that you're doing something right?
Yeah, that's a great question. The Western population, we believe, and research by Dr. Schultz at Washington State University and others has suggested that in the 1980s, we had millions, like 4 to 10 million monarch butterflies overwintering in the Western U.S. This is the migratory Western population that overwinters in California. We now typically have a few hundred thousand monarchs every winter. Unfortunately, we're in the middle of our overwintering count right now, the Western monarch count, and early reports suggest that we only have about 7,000 butterflies this year. So this is likely to be our second lowest ever Western monarch population since monitoring began in the late 1990s. So this threatened listing decision that the Fish and Wildlife Service announced this week and that was published today could not come any sooner. It's really essential and given the low population. So we'd like to get back into the millions of monarchs like we had in the 1980s.
So these butterflies, they're migratory, right?
Correct.
So how do you count them?
So people count the butterflies in a variety of different ways, but the counts that are used to estimate the size of the whole population occur in the winter time when these migratory animals cluster in the smallest locations. So the eastern population primarily overwinters in the mountains of central Mexico, and the western population primarily overwinters on the California coast, and there are monitoring programs in both locations to estimate the size of the population. In Mexico, they measure the area of trees that are occupied, and that population is much larger. In California, there is literally an army of volunteers that are part of the Western Monarch Count who are incredibly dedicated and go to these sites each fall. We have an early count, a mid count, and a late count, and go to these sites and actually estimate the number of butterflies clustering in trees like you would count jelly beans in a jelly bean jar.
Wow. Okay. That's a lot of work. When did this decline first get noticed, and how precipitous was the drop? Did it happen over a few years, or did it happen over a couple of decades?
Yeah. So monitoring began in the late 1990s. And for the Western population, we did see a sharp decline after about 1997. And then monarch numbers have been in the few hundred thousands really since then.
Okay. So let's be real. Your work is upstream in the food chain for humans. And if you're successful, there'll be more nutritious plants for humans to consume, right?
I'm sorry, I don't understand your question.
Well, we're talking about pollinating plants, right?
Oh, sure. Yes, so, and the importance of pollinators.
So I'm wondering if the investment that we're making, about like $300,000, is that enough?
Yeah, I do not think that this specifically saving monarchs is going to address issues with pollination as a whole.
But it's a start.
I think monarchs are an important ambassador for so many different insects that provide a wide variety of services, okay, pollination being a key one.
We've run out of time, but I really appreciate your work. Thank you, Serena.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
My guest was Serena Jepson, Director of the Endangered Species Program at the Xerces Society.